Safety's an interesting one. I'm really happy that I'm kind of happy the question was asked, and I'm happy that it was asked a second time. She mentioned that, that certain general rules about safety, you kind of hope that they would be agreed upon, right? And I find myself thinking, like, wouldn't it be nice if there was, like, just a list posted above the door to every studio, and it was like the Ten Commandments of yoga safety, right? Thou shalt not sway the low back. Thou shalt not turn the head and shoulder stand, right? And, and maybe all the teachers would teach the same rules and all the students would learn the same rules. Like, wouldn't that be kind of nice? Like, if there was so much more kind of universal rules of safety. It sounds kind of sweet, I think. But as an artist, as a creative type, that actually kind of sounds terrible to me. I think we could arguably keep some more people safe with something like that, but the idea kind of implies some kind of one-size-fits-all perspective that I just can't agree with, right? I do my best when I'm leading a TT not to create a system of dogma for people. I'm kind of doing my best to keep my personal opinion out of it, in a sense, because I don't want to corner people into a belief system about alignment or safety. And so you guys have probably heard me say things like, well, Ashtanga teaches this, and Iyengar teaches that, and Forest Yoga teaches this, right? Does that sound familiar to you guys, that kind of an answer? It's like the it depends answer. Yeah. So I think, even amongst all that kind of open-ended chatter. Iona's saying it also depends on the intention, right? What's the intention of what the teacher is putting out in that moment? What are they trying to emphasize? Yeah. And so, we're all doing our best to choose an intention and to emphasize the kind of most ideal principles of safe alignment in that intention, say. But at the same time, personally, I'm trying to sort of to take a step back and say, well, right, it depends each step of the way. It depends on what the intention is. It depends on who the teacher is. It depends on what the teacher's background of injury is, right? I do my best to keep it all quite open, to keep it all quite democratic in a certain way. And yet, even with all that, I know that some of you guys have left a training with me saying, well, that was a lot of information. I'm not sure how much I really got, but at least I know how to keep my knees safe, right? At least I know how to protect my lumbar spine. At least I know how to protect my neck, right? And that's great, right? It's great to have a foundation, and it's great to know how to protect yourself. But the trouble begins, I think, when you consider the very real possibility that I am just totally wrong, right? If you consider the very real possibility that I was wrong about the knees, or wrong about the spine, or wrong about the neck, right? Just because I think I know what I'm talking about doesn't mean that I do. Just because I know how to protect my own spine doesn't mean I know how to protect your spine, right? Just because I've read a couple more books than you, or dissected more bodies than you, or seen more injuries than you, it doesn't really mean that I know any kind of truth, right? So the trouble is when we get some information that sort of works for us, and then we really just start to crystallize and concretize and sort of cement ourselves into this new information, right? But let's say, for argument's sake, that something hit home for you. Let's take it even one step further. Let's say that when I suggested that pointing your knees the same direction as your toes is a good way to protect your knees in standing poses, right? You guys remember a lesson like that? Point your knees the same direction as your toes in your standing poses. You'll put less stress on the knees. So let's say you're with another teacher and they tell you to point your knee the other way, right? And so you're like, you're in the standing pose and you've got this thought in your head and you're like, well, Vanyan told me to do this, but this teacher's telling me to do something different. So now you're kind of in a bind, right? You're in a bind. You know, Vanyan told you to do one thing, another teacher's telling you to do something else. So what do you do in a situation like that? Any ideas? What do you do? You've got two conflicting pieces of information. I'd say the most kind of Zen approach, right? The simplest answer here is just to do... Oh, hi, Tom. Cool, good to see you here. Tom says, go with the one that speaks to your own intuition. Yeah. That's a good idea, right? Go with the one that sort of... that feels right, right? I think that's what he's getting at. Not necessarily the sort of psychological mind, not the one that adds up to kind of your information levels, but the one that hits you in the gut, right? Right, the one that makes sense to you. So that's one way to do it. Any other ideas from you guys? It's like, who do I listen to? Which voice in my head do I listen to? Yeah, what I was going to say is maybe the simplest answer is just to do exactly what the teacher is telling you to do in the moment, right? To just do as you're told. To remain a beginner. You know, we were talking last week about being ready to learn something new. You know, being ready to unlearn. And that requires us to kind of remember that the tighter we grip onto the belief systems, the more difficult it is to transform or to wake up, right? So instead of being in this class and saying, oh, this teacher doesn't know what they're talking about, I know what I'm supposed to do with my knee, you know, and I'm going to do what I know is right because I'm a certified teacher myself, instead of that, you empty your cup. Right, you empty your cup. You empty your impressions, you empty your information, you empty your teachings, you empty your beliefs, and you say, what can I learn right now? Right? And so instead of there being this like voice inside that says, this is wrong, right? That's a voice that visits me when I go to a vinyasa yoga class sometimes, you know, just like, this person, you know, this is wrong, this is not safe, this is bad sequencing, right? Once you study this stuff intellectually, it's hard for that voice to shut up. But instead of there being this voice inside that says, this is wrong, maybe you could get to the place where you hear a voice that says, this is different. Right? This is different. Like, I wonder where this is going. And it's like, now you're back in meditation again, and you aren't fighting your thoughts anymore. You're just watching them. Are you guys with me on this? Yeah, so Tom is saying, but with something like the knee thing, isn't it unsafe to follow certain directions? Hang on one second, Tom. That's a fun question. Let me. It looks like there's some kind of a option I need to click here. Candace says the public chat. I need to change the public chat, something or other. One second, guys. Okay. Try again, Candace. I think I may have just changed that setting, so you should be able to. Yeah, I think you guys couldn't see each other's messages, but now you should be able to. Yes. Okay. So Tom is saying with something like the knee thing, isn't it unsafe to follow certain directions? I don't think so. I wish it was that simple, Tom. Like it'd be cool if it was, but I don't really think it is, right? Like, do you guys remember me suggesting that like going from deep forward folds to deep back bends back and forth is a little dangerous on the spine? You guys remember that lesson? Yes? Yeah. Okay. So that's absolutely an unproven theory, right? And there are lots of yoga practices, yoga sequences, really, really popular ones, like the Bikram sequence, for example, which go back and forth like that, which go from a deep forward fold to a deep back bend, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It's like the whole closing series. And even some parts of the Ashtanga series are like that as well. So here you have a rule, right? A rule from Banyan anyway, which of course is a rule from one of my teachers. And the rule suggests that there's danger, and yet lots of people are doing something that appears to have that danger, and they don't get hurt, right? Why don't they get hurt? I don't know. You know, I'd like to believe that maybe something else in the sequencing gives them some safety. Bikram's the easiest example, right? Bikram's done in such a hot room that maybe the same rules don't apply as they do in the practice that I'm doing, right? Because I get a little hot. I get a little sweaty sometimes in my practice, but I'm not drenched in sweat. My muscles are not nearly as sort of taffy and stretchy-like as somebody in a Bikram class. So I don't think it's as easy to say that, right, it's always better to point your knee the same direction as your toe. Right? Most of the time, some of the time, you know, in extended side angle pose, sure. But not all the time. And Tom, I mean, we can also make the case that somebody whose knees are healthy should be pointing them other directions besides over the toes in order to stress them the right amount, right? It's like maybe there's a window of less risk with the knee in the sort of 5 degrees to the left of the big toe and 5 degrees to the right of the pinky toe. And in the 5 to 10 degrees left or right, like off center, right, in that slightly larger span, maybe there's opportunity for stress, just like we put stress on a muscle if we want it to grow larger, right? I don't know. I mean, okay, you're asking all the right questions, Tom, right? You know, are there places that are more black and white, like moving your neck and shoulder stand? Again, you know, lots of people turn their neck and shoulder stand and don't get hurt. Lots of people forward fold, twist, pick up a box, and then lift up the heavy box and don't hurt their backs. You know, I used to pick up loads of, you know, bags of concrete, bags of soil, cinder blocks, stuff like that. And I had terrible form, and I never got hurt in my low back. So I'd like to think that the rules are clear, but they're not, right? They're theories, they're concepts, they're ideas, and none of them could be totally true. I don't really think they are. That doesn't mean that the rules aren't useful for us, right? I think it's cool to learn the rules and then experiment. You know, once we've got some nuance, we can start to play. Yeah, Tom's saying, you know, plenty of people have also played Russian roulette and have gotten away with it. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't mean it's necessarily smart to pull the trigger. Yeah. Yeah, there's something to be said for that, but I think what we need as yogis is to remain beginners, right? And that doesn't mean we do something reckless with our bodies, right? It doesn't mean we do something kind of careless or dangerous, but if we can be in a place that challenges the rules that we've learned, and we can approach these things with curiosity, right? Like, huh, this is different, right? Like, I wonder where this is going. Like, if we could have that kind of a mindset, then maybe we'd be able to move from teacher to teacher and see how each teacher approaches the same problem, right? And of course, there could be some teachers who just don't even think there is a problem, right? They don't consider the safety angle, and that's something we need to watch out for, right? That's something, you know, when I'm with a very, very flexible female teacher who just has a naturally flexible body, right? I feel like I got to keep my guard up. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that what she's doing is wrong or necessarily careless. It's just a question of like, okay, what can I learn from this? Right? Are you guys with me? Just maintaining that beginner's mind. And, you know, of course, the second approach is maybe what some of you guys are suggesting. The second approach is just focus completely on your own safety. Right? You know, if you're nursing an injury and you feel like you know how to work with it, then maybe the teacher gives you some contrasting advice, right? Advice that doesn't seem to work for your injury or your own safety. And so you sort of just do what you know works for you, right? And maybe we can say that's a little bit like, you know, trusting your own intuition, right? Somebody says, you know, the teacher says, okay, let's all do tripod headstand. And you do something else, right? If you don't want to do tripod headstand. And if the teacher confronts you, you just say, well, my neck doesn't feel good when I do that. Right? But you don't say to the teacher, well, my other teacher, Banyan, told me not to do tripod headstand, and he knows more than you. Right? That's not going to help. Not only is that going to disturb the process between you and the new teacher, but it's just straight up not true. You know, that's a belief system becoming an obstacle to learning again. You with me? So I got this comment back from Iona a few minutes ago. Let me read back. So Iona says, remember how Leslie was concerned about newbies possibly injuring someone? What if the teacher doesn't really know their stuff, and instead of using your intuition, you do just listen to the teacher and you end up injuring? However, had I not listened to you, I wouldn't have progressed. I'd still be afraid to do many things and limit myself. Yeah. Okay. So I think the meaty question here is, what if the teacher doesn't really know their stuff, and instead of using your intuition, you just follow the teacher and you end up getting hurt? My fear is this is a question of whose fault is it, right? Like, if the teacher gives bad advice and the student follows it, arguably that's the teacher's karma, right? In that moment, I think the student really kind of wins some points for trusting the teacher, right? For assuming that the teacher has his or her kind of best interests in mind. But of course, realistically, you guys know how tragically short 200 hours is, right? You know that in 200 hours, someone can become a certified yoga teacher without knowing a whole lot at all, right? I mean, it's like, it's hilarious to me that it only takes 200 hours to become a yoga teacher. Now, it doesn't take 200 hours to become a great yoga teacher. It takes thousands of hours to become a great yoga teacher, right? But it doesn't take much to get certified. It doesn't take much to get started. So Iona's asking a great question, right? Like, there's lots of teachers who just don't know their stuff. And they might be giving bad advice. So I think as students, one of the, you know, this kind of comes back to sort of choosing teachers. Kind of we were talking about a few minutes ago with Cecily's story. As students, one of the things we need is a bullshit meter, right? We need to be listening for signs that the teacher does know what they're talking about or signs that the teacher doesn't know. And it's a bummer that we need to spend some of our consciousness, some of our mind process on that. But that's the reality of the game. And it's a big reality of the game if you're jumping from teacher to teacher to teacher every week, right? Because you don't know in whose hands you're in. And so you can see that there's a challenge to jumping from teacher to teacher, right? You can see that if you're going even just from one good teacher who you trust to another good teacher who you trust, you're going to get contrasting information, right? I have a very good friend named Eric. He teaches Iyengar yoga here in Sebastopol. He's a phenomenal teacher. He knows stuff about alignment that blows my mind, right? And yet, every single class I'm in there, there's something that jumps out at me where I'm like, ooh, I don't know, man. Like, I don't really necessarily think that's the best way to go about that, right? And, you know, maybe this is why the tradition is actually kind of clear. The yoga tradition is not about going to a weekend workshop with a new teacher every week, right? The tradition of yoga says stick with one teacher. And I don't know, you know, was there even a possibility to study with a new teacher every week back in those days? I kind of doubt it. But most of the ancient yogis spent a lifetime with their teacher, or decades, right? And if you just consider what Patanjali's intent is, right, how he defines yoga, citta vritti nirodha. Yoga is what? Yoga is the calming of the fluctuations of the mind. And if that's the goal, right, if your goal is to reduce the mind's chatter, then why would you put yourself in a situation where you're questioning the teacher's methodology? Or you're questioning, as Iona's saying, you're questioning the teacher's, if the teacher knows their stuff, right? You know, Rod would say it like this. He'd say, study with the best, right? Like if you're going to learn skiing, you don't study with like the 16-year-old kid who just is a good skier, right? You study with an amazing ski instructor. Study with the best. So if you're in a situation where every week you have to, right, study with a different teacher and compare and contrast, and you compare their technique to somebody else's, you know, you wouldn't probably be having that experience in a traditional setting, right? In the traditional setting, you'd just find one teacher. If you were lucky, you'd find one teacher, and then you would just do what you're told. And maybe even the teacher would give you bad advice and hurt you, and that would be the teacher's karma. That'd be the teacher's actions, right? He or she would say, oh shit, I made a mistake here, and now I need to improve my methodology, right? But it's the student's idea. It's the student's role to just say, okay, right? I've definitely followed some crappy advice from teachers that I respect very much, right? You just do what you're told. So I don't mean to be like a old-fashionist, you know, to be a traditionalist. But we can say that things were a lot simpler back in the good old days, right? I sound like make yoga great again. But no, back in those days, you didn't have to worry about contrasting advice regarding the minutiae of practice, right? You just worried about doing the work your teacher gave you to do. And, you know, it's also said in the Upanishads, actually, it says that the closer the student gets, the harder the teacher must be on the student. Like, it's the teacher's job to ramp up the intensity as the student becomes more capable, as the student becomes more, like, ready for the challenge. And again, it's like we're talking about a relationship, right? You know, you work your way into the big challenges. You guys ever been in a relationship where, like, right at the beginning, you're, like, thrown into, like, huge stuff? I remember when Joe and I met, we were traveling India together pretty soon after we'd met. We were, you know, traveling in one of the hardest places in the world to travel. And we were both violently ill, you know, terribly ill. And we're sharing this room, which, you know, there was a curtain between the bed and the toilet. Like, just a curtain between the bed and the toilet. And so you're, like, listening to somebody being terribly ill just 3 feet away through a curtain, right? And we were laughing about, like, wow, like, this is a heavy way to start a relationship. This is, like, a good test. Like, if you can listen to somebody, you know, with everything coming out of both ends, if you can listen to somebody do that for a couple of weeks and still love them, that's a pretty good start, right? But most new relationships aren't ready for the birth of a child or the death of a parent or, like, a major illness or something like that, right? If you saw those challenges at the beginning of a relationship, they'd be really stressful, like extraordinarily stressful. But after a few years with that person, after some commitment or some trust has been built, you've got this more solid foundation to stand on, right? And then you're more ready to face those challenges together. So, you know, I hope you guys understand, I really do not mean to be pressuring you into choosing one teacher or pressuring you into, you know, monogamous relationships. I only want you to appreciate the context of the tradition that we study and see why it usually did go down a certain way, right? Yeah, let me pause here because I'm seeing another good question from Candace. Would you ever confront your teacher on something that you didn't really agree on? I don't mean to challenge them, but asking in a way to hear their side in order to understand more where they are coming from. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a delicate game, but it's absolutely a game that I play, Candace. You know, so much of it is about language and timing. Obviously, you know, in the midst of an asana class, I'm not going to say, this doesn't feel right, I blah, 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 I think that we should be doing it differently, obviously. But maybe after class, if there's a moment where I can get a private moment with the teacher and say something like, hey, when we did Virasana today, you said, you know, this just happened to me maybe two months ago. I said, you said that you wanted the outer knees, the lateral aspect of the knee to get heavier and the medial aspect of the knee to get lighter. And what I find is that when I do that, I get more stress on my medial portion of the knee. And I'm just wondering, what are you trying to do there? Like, what's the purpose of that rotation? What is it that you're trying to free up or unstick or something like that, right? So, you know, just trying to say it in a non-confrontational way. Like, what's the point of that, right? What is your intent? Iona's saying that's where I don't mind a bit of description about the intent, right? If the teacher tells you what it is they're looking for, that can be really useful. So yeah, I think that's fair, Candace, but you know, by the time you're having that conversation, the class is over, right? And again, you're having this, you know, in the portion of the class, in the situation of the class, you were still sitting there, like, having this little inner dialogue with yourself. Like, should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do this? Should I do that? And what I find is that, you know, coming back to kind of Tom's question about, like, surely some of these rules are pretty damn solid. What I find is that if I'm careful, I can break almost all of the rules that I've made for myself without getting hurt, right? That doesn't mean I violently twist my head and shoulder stand, but I do asymmetrical shoulder stands that put asymmetrical stress on my neck, right? And knock on wood, so far so good, right? So, does that answer your question, Candace? I think it's A-okay to have a conversation like that, you know, obviously with care. Yeah. And I'd like to think that a good teacher could handle that conversation gracefully, right? I know there's been moments where I've been challenged and, you know, through impatience or exhaustion or distraction or hunger even, I know that I have not been receptive, right? And other times I know I'm able to kind of hear this person and hear what they're going through and hear their question or their confusion or their disagreement with a certain amount of love, right, and care. So Iona says, I've had many neck injuries and my neck never felt better after yoga teacher training with you, as I never did any neck poses. I'd completely avoid them previously. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so maybe that's maybe what I'm reading between the lines, Iona, but I guess what I'm hearing is that sometimes the rules we set for ourselves are actually obstacles, right? Like you had an impression on what you needed to do to heal your neck, and unlearning that was actually how you started to heal your neck. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great example, right? And it doesn't mean that whoever told you not to do neck poses was giving you bad advice. They were giving you great advice, right? For that particular time, in that particular moment, in that particular way, right? Doing shoulder stand poorly is a bad idea. But doing shoulder stand on five blankets with care and within them, you know, and all that stuff, maybe it's actually healing. So, you know, maybe most importantly, we just need to zoom out when we're face-to-face with stuff like this and just remember our relationship to truth. Remember the basics. Do you guys remember the basics? How everything we look at is a product of us, right? It's a product of what it's what we think we know. Everything we observe is what we think we know. You know, it's like Newton's laws of physics, right? Newton's laws totally defined what people understood about physics and gravity and velocity and attraction and so on, right? And that was truth in the world of physics. Until Einstein came along and said, well, actually, everything's relative, right? It's all relative to where you're standing. Yeah, it depends. the lesson of Einstein. It depends.